Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and the random assortment of news that we read every week. My name is Dan Morton, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host, John Moltz is here. Hi, John.
I love all kinds of bacon, including Kevin Bacon.
Those are, you know, turkey bacon.
I'll eat some turkey bacon. It's not my favorite.
But, I had some turkey bacon the other day. It's pretty good. It's solid. I did not have some Kevin Bacon. Guy English is also here. Hi, Guy.
Often I'm annoyed that John takes the good jokes. But
not this time.
Not this time.
Okay, fine.
Turkey bacon's fine. Well, it's just I don't like the eat turkey bacon for turkey bacon, not as
not as bacon.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, it's not as bacon. Yeah, but it's like, I mean, I don't know. Like, do you want to get into a whole Canadian bacon digression here?
That's ham, though, isn't it? Yeah, like, I don't understand, really.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. I don't know. It's fine. It's fine for for what it is. Yeah. But it's not bacon. Bacon.
Right.
Yeah. We all agreed. Sorry, I should have just started this. This is a podcast about bacon.
Sure. Well, Francis God Bacon. Knows we've got nothing else.
Anyone?
To talk about,
so. She-Hulk has come to an end, and it's a while before our next episodic series that we're going to cover or whatever. We'll probably talk maybe about Black Panther if we all get to see it, and then there is the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special coming up at the end of the month, which we'll touch upon a little bit later in the show. And then I think Secret Invasion is the next thing really on the books for us, and that is nominally spring, which seems like a long time away.
Wow.
Yeah.
We're gonna how did we go from it's like feast or famine, right?
And yeah, really.
Yeah, I know. Right.
It's a famine. So there's a lot of old shows that we haven't discussed. There's tons.
That's true. Yeah. There's probably some catalog material. See, that
just
we
even
could
animated
cover.
Stuff. Like I watched Earth's Mightiest Heroes, Avengers, Earth's Mightiest Heroes recently. It's good. It's pretty good.
Was that on Disney Plus?
It is, yes.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
It's only two seasons, pretty short, pretty good. I don't know if it's Justice League good, but it's close.
Okay.
It's like pretty well done. And then there's Justice League, and you know, Tony's covered all the Batman stuff mostly. So, but whatever. I'm sure we can come up with something.
Arrow season two, always on this.
Yeah, in the back burner. I just don't know if I can go back to that world anymore.
It's tough.
Yeah.
Indeed. But this week, we're going to do one of our giant-sized superhero sweeps, in which we round up some of the latest news in superhero TV shows and movies. Hey, let's start it off with something that was basically new news. As of the day before we record this, there was a report in, I think it originated in Deadline, saying that there is in development over at Marvel a Vision series starring Paul Bettany, which would pick up presumably after the end of WandaVision. So, an interesting, I think that was like one of those story arcs that was left out there hanging after WandaVision is we have the so-called White Vision, who is the rebooted Vision, who's flying around out there without much of a personality.
Right.
And, yeah, I guess it's a bit of a loose cannon.
Yeah, why?
Yeah.
What is that character? And what is he without Wanda? I mean, obviously, maybe that's what the show explores.
I think that seems likely.
Yeah, I would hope so.
Oh, they're just going to gloss over that. It's just going to be White Vision floating
He becomes a dentist.
Yeah.
That I would watch.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I just don't have a lot of interest in that character. He was great on WandaVision, but that show was remarkably well done and had a great concept, right? Like a, you know, a woman who can change reality dealing with grief and how does that manifest itself? Manifests itself as a robot in a comfy sweater. But I don't really know what Vision is, right? Like, does he go hang out with, Ultron created them. Is he attached to MODOK in the comics in any way? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
No.
In the comics, he's quite different, right?
Yeah, but, exactly. So there's Wonder Man, right?
Yeah, right. Somehow his brain is based on Wonder Man's brain.
Yeah, Simon Cowell. Let's just call him Simon Cowell. Simon Williams.
And so they're both in love with Wanda, right?
Right.
Yeah, I think at one point, yes.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So, well, a couple other details that might make this more interesting. This will be overseen by Jack Schaefer, who was the creator, writer, and executive producer of WandaVision. Okay. So there you go.
Yeah.
And two, I just laugh about this, if this is true or not, at least the working title of the show is Vision Quest, which just makes me laugh, and I love it.
Yeah, except they're going to get some Chakotay / TNG, Peyote Pop and Will Wheaton stuff, which I don't think that's a good way to do it.
The sort of tentative series, so there's a writer's room, it sounds like, that's kicking up now, would be about the Vision trying to regain his memory and humanity, which could provide, I think, an interesting idea. I mean, we haven't done a lot of stuff about sort of, you know, what does it mean to be alive? What does it mean, right? Like, this is sort of the conversation that the two Visions had, and I feel like it's sort of stemming out of that.
That is interesting.
If it was just him talking to himself about the ship of Theseus for, you know, a half an hour every week, I would watch that.
Paul Bettany is amazing. Like, honestly, one of my favorite little bits of that show is when he's just sitting in a deck chair outside of a camp, like a trailer, in makeup.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I can't forget what he does, but he's just basically
he
doing
finally
a,
gets
like,
fed up, like, why am I sitting here talking to you? And he gets up and walks
away. It's just so perfect. Yeah. He's a great, great actor. I like him a lot. And obviously, well, maybe not obviously, he's in Master and Commander, which is one of the best Star Trek
the
movies
doctor,
ever made.
Right?
Yeah. It is a great, like,
that was,
just
that, I really enjoyed that movie. It was super fun, very, you know, sort of simple, but I mean,
yeah,
and
that's
they,
what I mean.
They had
yeah.
the idea of making a series of movies out of that, and then that failed, like, unfortunately.
I read that book, and I mean, that series is incredibly long. It's like 20 books or something like that.
Yeah,
I thought it would be great. Yeah, I mean, watching a series of that would be a lot of fun, I think.
Oh, 100%. It is Star Trek. Like, I'm not
really
joking that much. Like, they go to an island do little science
Napoleonics.
Expedition. They're like...
Yeah, Napoleonic Star Trek.
Yeah.
It's very much the same thing, though. Or it's got the elements. Is that Hornblower? I forget. It's not Hornblower.
Hornblower? No. It's Patrick O'Brien. Yeah. It's inspired, largely inspired by the Horatio Hornblower novels, which I loved as a teen. And my wife is a huge fan of.
Yeah, they're great. Also, the reason I bring that up, dear reader, is... Star Trek's based on Hornblower, at least Captain Kirk is a
Kirk
Hornblower.
Was based on Hornblower, right.
There is, I believe, a Hornblower series from the 2000s, I want to say, starring Ian Gruffudd, who played, of course, Reed Richards in the Fantastic Four movies, so there's your tie-in.
Man.
Dang!
Is that a segue?
That's what we're doing next week, everybody. Yeah. Fire up your Hornblowers and... fire up your Hornblowers. It's not a sentence I ever envisioned myself saying. Welcome back to the Hornblower Corps, everyone. Yeah. And
so, I guess, what are we going to talk about? Reed Richards now? Is that the concept?
I mean, we can. Yeah.
Why not?
We don't know that it's Reed Richards, right? We just
I'll give you a last closing note in the Vision series, which is they said there is a possibility that Wanda could appear.
Sure.
But it's mainly focused on Vision.
She didn't. Even just flashbacks or something, right? Like some.
Yeah.
Kind of,
yeah. And. Yeah. I saw somebody suggesting somewhere, it might have been in one of the Incomparable member Slack, that like if this was going more of a comedic bent, having Darcy and Jimmy Woo show up again would be pretty great, because there's a lot of characters you could throw into this mix that I think could be kind of fun.
Yeah, so, well, Bentley does have the chops for he's amazing. He could pull anything off. So
there's that great run of the Vision where he makes his own family.
Right,
which sort of did a little bit of in WandaVision, but they didn't really go full blown into that. I mean, you get
if
that
you
feeling,
yeah, you could mine that a
yeah,
lot
you
more,
really could.
Right?
Yeah,
and I would say, I mean, you know, let's cast our minds back before WandaVision premiered. Mm-hmm. I believe we read that run and talked about it on an episode. If I were a little more prepared, I would be able to scroll back through our enormous archive.
I'll
put in the computer sound effect there, guy.
Yeah,
and
the M5 computer.
Tell me where you are on the.
Did you guys see Lower Decks this week?
Yes.
Did you notice the screen on the computer that the Admiral is using?
Is it the M5?
Oh, yeah, the M5. Definitely.
Yeah.
I was convinced they were going to mention the M5, but they didn't. So, whatever.
And I've told you about that. I showed you that shirt, right? I have that shirt.
What?
The M5 shirt.
Oh, if you did, I forgot.
I'll find it.
Out of pure jealousy, I forgot. That's great.
Yeah, it's I love it. I wear that, and people always ask about it. Like,
thanks for letting me stall for time, by the way. episode 67 of Biff. Wow. Is where we covered the Vision run.
We're at like 162 or something now.
Yeah, much. Yeah. Yeah.
I've been doing this for many years.
It was 100 episodes ago we talked about that. So there you go. Yeah. Anyways, yes, let's. You want to segue over to talking about other MCU stuff?
Sorry, or do we have other? I was sort of nonplussed yesterday when you mentioned it. But just talking to you now, I am more excited. There are interesting things to do there. Like, is he regaining his memory? Whose memories are them? Are they? Are they his? Is he making his own? Who's he going to be? I guess because I stumbled into, well, I guess maybe I'm always living and breathing Star Trek. There's interesting, I mean, don't do Data, but like there's sci-fi-y plots there about what it means to be alive and a human. And, and is, does he want to be a human? Does he want to be something else? Like that's, there's meat on those bones, and Paul Bettany's always fun to watch. So I don't know why my initial reaction was I don't care, but it should be fun. So. I think
giving him the opportunity to pop up there as opposed to just having that plot line surface somewhere else.
I think would be a little,
I think it'd be better to have him do his own thing rather than having it be like, oh, we need to wrap this up in some other place. And that's the interesting freedom that the MCU has right now, is they can put all these irons in the fire and just be like, hey, we want to pick up this thing, or somebody's got a good pitch for this thing and like a good idea that they want to do. Go ahead. You know, rock and roll. So I think that's, and to have Jack Schaefer, who did a great job with WandaVision, know, to be, I think it's interesting too, because she is also overseeing the Agatha show, but I assume that will, since this is just starting now, I assume that would basically be in like, you know, that'll be shot or in post-production by the time this gets, you know, started up. So
yeah, and in some ways it's, maybe my reaction was such, well, AO is probably grumpy, or just, well, I wasn't grumpy, just cracking jokes and being an idiot. The Vision as such has always been like adjacent to somebody, right? Like he was Tony's computer for the longest time, and then he was like Wanda's plus one, and at no point is he, or Ultron's vessel in which to rule the universe, I guess, whatever Ultron's banana's plan was. And at no point has he actually been really his own character. Expect him WandaVision. So I guess my thinking initially was just like, well, what do we care? He's without somebody to attach to, he's, there's no utility to him. And so yeah, maybe he, I have completely changed my mind, and now I'm thinking I was done. So there you go. It happens. Every now and then I'm wrong.
I'm writing it down. Say that.
Marking
the date. I admit when I'm wrong. Come on.
Marking the date here.
Yeah.
Shall we take a sideways step as long as we're in the MCU and talk about Ant-Man Quantumania, which is not the next movie in the MCU lineup, which of course be Black Panther, which comes out in just a couple weeks.
December 11th.
But the following movie, which comes out, I believe, I want to say next February. Is that right?
I think so.
It's something like that.
Yeah.
We got a trailer for it the other week, in which we see the adventures of Scott and Hope and Cassie, along with Hank and Janet. This just sounds like a 1970s like movie. Oh, it's Hank and Janet and Scott and Hope.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to tell you, but they're all 70s, well, I guess 60s characters, right? Like, yeah.
Yeah, true. And gave us our first look at Jonathan Majors as a new version of Kang. Yeah. Yes,
much,
the more traditional,
more sinister
Kang.
We should note
that guy's great.
Just to be pedantic, although thankfully none of our readers are pedantic, so I don't. It's weird because you're all comic book fans, so it's awesome that not if you give us grief or anything. They never called him Kang on Loki. He was always the one who remains.
Yeah, he who must remain. Yeah, he remains. Yeah.
He looks badass.
Yeah.
Like that Jonathan Majors is great. He's just a fantastic actor.
Terrifying, really.
He's, even when he's being boisterous at the end of Loki, he's kind of terrifying. I love the sort of the battle scar down his face that mirrors the character design. So obviously in the comics, he's blue and he's got these like white lines that sort of go from almost the peak of his eyebrows down his cheeks. And they didn't do that here, because when you've got a face like Jonathan Majors, don't cover it up.
Yeah.
It's awesome. You know? So he's got like this cool scar, but he is terrifying. Anybody that walks slowly, you know what I mean? Like Vader walks real slow and you don't want to mess with Vader. Like he's in no rush.
He doesn't have to. They do have a scene where he is blue in the trailer, but he's like, it's like, I think he's like the lighting of his, like inside his helmet
My take is it's going to be one of those Guardians of the Galaxy, like face shield things that come on and then gets removed when he, you know.
If you look, there's a scene where his
army is assembled and they all have blue faces too. So I suspect it's like a costume, kind of like a military outfit, a uniform.
Did you guys have a like overriding feeling from this trailer? Like, what did you have like a impression?
It seems
reminded me of Star Trek. No, it didn't. I'm just joking. Sorry.
Well, it seemed heavy on the CGI stuff, so it was a little less, you know, less grounded than the previous two Ant-Man movies, you know, from the looks of it. And I guess that bothered me a little bit. I wasn't really super drawn into it. I mean, I really was impressed with Jonathan Majors. You know, obviously he's a terrific actor, so I wasn't surprised that he could do this, but it's cool to see it when he does this, you know, play a very different character, you know, same character, it's ostensibly, but a very different version of that character, and have it come across in just like a few seconds is terrific. But the overall effect of the trailer, left me a little bit cold, I guess, just because it did seem like a lot of over the top stuff.
Well, I mean, I hate to tell you about superheroes.
I know. But the ones that I like tend to be more, you know, the ones that I like the most tend to be much more grounded.
I would say the things that I...
John's a very nitty gritty kind of guy.
I'm joking. I like the Batman Begins quite a bit.
Batman Begins is great. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to comment on a couple of things. So I agree. I mean, I liked the first two a lot, and because they had such a grounding in the real world, I think that was an appealing part of it. I will say I like kind of the look of this, since it has a sort of a weird, I'm going to go a different direction from Guy and say a Star Warsy look, because there's a scene where they're like in a cantina or something, I don't know what that's about, but like it's kind of wacky. There's a lot of aliens with weird designs and stuff, which I kind of appreciate. So like, I don't know. There's something different going here, but I feel like this trailer, and this is more of a, you know, teaser, right? It doesn't really go too much into the whole details, but I think that some of this is Marvel keeping its powder dry, as it often does.
Yes.
And not...
Right.
But like, because the one thing I would comment on is that the Ant-Man movies, I think, are very much known for their comedy, where there's very little of that. Like, we get one gag at the beginning, which is very funny.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of very serious after that. But I can't imagine they would go in, and especially since this is the same director and same creative team, pretty much, it seems like. I think they know what worked about the previous movies, and they're not going to be like, let's throw all of that out.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like I don't see Michael Pena driving his little crazy car around, like his tricked out Honda CRX around, you know, the microverse or anything. Oh wait, it's not what do we call it? The quantum realm.
Yeah,
we're not allowed to use the microverse. That's apparently.
Yeah, it's
that's Jason's thing. And
that's right. We're not licensed for that.
We're not allowed to use it. Okay.
Well, probably not. I don't want to touch his territory.
Yeah, really. I know. Yeah, we'll get in trouble.
Yeah,
I will say this is our first view of Catherine Newton playing the aged up version of Cassie Lang, who was played by a different actress when they appeared in Endgame.
Yeah, yeah.
Looking great. She,
yeah, she, and she yeah. looks Newton. Enough like her that, you know, it's like, I mean, she's only in that movie for a short bit, so you can
like when they recast Sarah Lance between seasons one and two, I guess.
Season
one, and I don't know the actress's name, and forgive me, bit of a scream queen appearance, you know, like they didn't really ask her to do much except get jettisoned from a boat and, you know, frolic in bed with Ollie. But they did great when they got, what's her name, Katie Cassidy. And I think it's one of those things where it's like, well, okay, we need you to stick around for a few movies, because this is not it for her, I bet. And, you know, we need somebody that we're... can ask a lot of, basically.
So I will say this actress, who I know from a couple different shows, including Halt and Catch Fire, in which she played one of Scoot McNairy's daughters, and guy may or may not remember her from Supernatural, in which she played, she was a long-running minor character.
Was she a hunter's daughter?
She is, in fact, I believe she's Jimmy Novak's daughter. She's Castiel's Vessel's daughter. Okay. And then she becomes, hangs out with, what's her name? The sheriff.
Yeah.
And she's like adopted by the sheriff. Yeah, basically. Yeah, so yeah. She is in a bunch of episodes. And she was great on that show too.
Yeah, sure. As that show. Yes, yes. And they're all great. It's not like that show is pretty high quality for what it is. It's just they ask people to do silly things week in, week out. So, you know, get silly.
Unlike a lot of other shows we watch, very serious weekend.
Honestly, Dan, you and I have in our back pockets during our retirement years, we can just pump out Supernatural podcasts and just go to the bank while John and I discuss MASH and just end up crying at the end. We're just going to cry every week. We're just going to have a big old tear fest at MASH episodes.
I want to know, Guy, what bank we're going to, and can we access that bank now? Really, is that an option? Because I would like to just start.
It's an imaginary bank.
There is no banks. There's a bunker full of food after the world has turned to a crisp.
So the robot apocalypse.
Yeah.
Who's listening to our podcast?
Dan, I haven't thought. That's all there I can is. Tell you. I'm not humanity, a good businessman. Yeah, I haven't thought this through.
You're asking the wrong questions, Dan.
Yeah. Humanity will survive. Communicate only via podcasts. All right. Well, this got depressing.
Like Twitter replacement. Just little audio clips. Anyway. So you didn't ask me what I thought about it,
Guy. What do you think of the trailer?
It really affected me. I liked it a lot. I'm a huge sucker for "Goodbye Yellow Brick Road." I honestly, mm-hmm. there's something about that song that just really, really touches me. The lyrics are written from the perspective of somebody who, you know, appears to be getting out of an abusive relationship with an older sugar daddy type dude, and it's haunting. It's a fun song to listen to, but when you actually feel it really affects you, and it's about sort of escaping a bad situation and trying to get back to the basics. Or back home to the farm, and hunting the horny back toad, which is an awesome thing for Bernie Taupin and Elton John to sing about. I, like John, my first impression was like, whoa, that's a lot of CGI. But like Dan, I was like, this has such a Star Wars feel to it, and I love it. You know, when you walk into a cantina, that's great. These are, it is a world that seems so imaginative and so out there and very, very comic booky, like just islands floating everywhere and weird purple lights and all kinds of cool stuff going on. You can immediately get a sense of sort of a social hierarchy, and that like sort of outside of the city, there's those vagabond types that they meet, including one guy who's just got a battery on his head, like a robot with it. Yeah. I'm like, that's such a cool design. That's so trippy. It's right out of a Kirby drawing. And I'm like, I dig it. Very, very cool. 2 hours of that getting blasted into my eyes, maybe a lot. It may be. It really may be.
I'm just saying, the trailer didn't grab me particularly, but yeah. I'm interested in seeing the movie. So, I mean, I still think it doesn't make me think less of the movie in particular.
Yeah. And I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm not knocking. Yeah. I'm sort of yes anding both of you and sort of I'm giving it an excited biff. For somehow your John Jr. added to Dan's mild biff is making me very excited, because I think that they took a risk. I think that they did some interesting stuff. It looks pretty cool. I think it's different
than the one that they should at D23. I haven't gone back and compared what, you know, like the
So the D23 one outlines the plot a bit more.
Yeah, it's a
heist. Basically, the setup is Kang needs Scott to go get MacGuffin.
Yeah, yeah.
Scott, good at getting MacGuffins, goes get some MacGuffin, and probably, I don't know if that was in there, I'm just going to assume, somebody has, you know, he pulled a flash scheme, or like a reverse flash scheme, and he abducted somebody that Scott cares about, would be my guess. Well, now that I outlined that story, I kind of don't care about it.
but it's all about, it's all about the execution, right? Yeah, it's always exactly. about the execution. Yeah. You can take a bad premise and make it better with a really interesting and well-executed, right. you know, technically.
Easy. Yeah, I mean, how many truck guys have we seen during the show?
Sure.
We've seen a lot, some better than others. Them. So, yeah, all of them, yeah.
Also, here's the thing. This is never a thing that I'm going to cite usually on the show, but I will mention it here because it made me laugh. I happened to scroll down because I was looking at the trailer on YouTube. I'll have to say the first two YouTube comments were actually pretty great. The first one who said, the guy in the trailer who says, "Thank you, Spider-Man," probably would have been Stan Lee if he were still alive. Yeah, and you're like, oh, that makes me sad. Yeah. And then the second person who said, "What I already like about this movie is that it's Scott who's going to be the first person to face the main villain of the multiverse." Yeah. that's true also. Scott Lang, not the guy you would pick as, like, number one, make your introductions with this character.
Scott Lang saved the universe. I'm sorry.
That's true. Like, Scott Lang did save the universe.
He came up with a plan, and he went to Avengers compound, and he's like, "Hey, you got to let me in the gate." And I'm like, "Who is this dude?" And whatever, he explained time travel to them, and sure, Tony did, but like the basic premise is entirely Scott's plan.
Yeah,
and it's a time heist. It is literally they do a time heist. They do his thing. It's like, you know what I do? I steal stuff. Let's go do that. And cool.
And I think as per the previous Juno movies, I have a lot of goodwill for this part of the franchise.
Me too.
And
yes.
I feel that they've earned my trust, so I'm willing. I'm excited, but I agree with John that it's not the strongest. If you're putting out your strongest play or something, this doesn't feel like it, but there's enough ingredients here that I like that. I was going to see it no matter what. Let's not kid ourselves. Right. So, I'm looking forward to seeing a little bit more and checking out the movie. Yeah. We should add, there was some like a late quote unquote addition to the cast, or at least in a report that William Jackson Harper from The Good Place, who played Chidi, would be joining the cast in an unknown role. To which I think a lot of us were like, "Well, they shot this movie already, so he's clearly not a major character in it unless he is doing a voiceover or."
Well,
I am assuming
he's appearing to appear later. You know, I mean, he's doing a cameo in this movie.
It's a cameo.
In order to introduce a character who will be a bigger part of the franchise's on.
I mean, they could do a voice, but I don't know. If you put him on screen, he's awesome. He's just such a good actor. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not to mention, have you seen that guy with his shirt off?
Oh yeah, no, I have.
it's not what you think.
Super surprising. I mean, it happens in The Good Place, right? I mean, like he shows up with it, he gives up his shirt off, and it's just like, what?
Yeah, I know. That guy does not skip philosophy day, leg day, chest day, abs day, any day. That guy's just going all the time.
Yeah. Oh man, that guy is older than me. That guy is like 2 months older than me.
Okay,
I gotta go work out, guys.
Oh, dude.
First of all, what do you mean he's that old, John?
No, I'm just surprised. I mean, he doesn't seem...
He seems younger. He seems in his 30s to me. I would have guessed like
33. Yeah, I would have... If you had asked me, I would have said he was like a decade younger than me, which is very depressing.
Dan, John and I have some tough news for you, buddy.
It gets better is what you're saying, right?
In some ways. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you see light, or you see the blackness at the end of the tunnel. So there's that.
That doesn't sound great.
You come to accept it.
The elephant in the room, right, is that a lot of people have been pushing for him to play Reed Richards, which, I don't have a favorite candidate particularly. I think I trust them to make the right decision. I think he would be fantastic. No pun intended. He's a wonderful actor and a lot of fun, and I think would just nail that role. So I would love it if it happens.
There is a possibility that Marvel will cast literally everybody that's been rumored as different multiverse versions of Reed Richards.
I think if they just, I mean, I would,
that would be funny.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one way, because here's the thing, like, everybody's trying to figure it out, right? Everybody wants to know who's playing this character. And like, we had all the John Krasinski rumors, and then of course John Krasinski played him in Multiverse of Madness. And it feels like what you do is it's like a security through obscurity kind of thing, where it's like, look, we will cast everybody to play him once.
Yeah.
And one of them will be the real one, but we're not telling you which one.
Yeah, I would totally do that. I mean, Kevin Feige doesn't seem like an 80s movie exec, coke-fueled maniac kind of guy. But if I was in his position, I would definitely like pop open a six-pack of Diet Cokes and just call up everybody and cast them. Just give them a bunch of money. Just send them weird scripts that you're never going to actually use, just to keep a stable of writers keeping going, and just mess everybody up, because why not? It's fun. Go with
Can
it.
Can I? You know? And let me add this fun Easter egg, which I'll throw out here. William Jackson Harper appears in a couple episodes of the Jack Ryan show on Amazon, where Ryan is played by John Krasinski. Yeah. So it's all connected, people.
Let me
get my red yarn out.
Looking glass.
Yeah, I like that show. Be aware that it's... it's Jack Ryan, CIA, and there's a bunch of Middle East stuff. So it
has a certain
episode
framing, on that show,
but it's quite... It's quite well
it has its up and downs, but it has its. So the Reed Richards thing, and obviously, is it a spoiler to talk about Kang?
Well, this
I don't know
where I was
going to
go
that...
because screw it. If you don't know anything about Kang, why are you reading this? Come on,
no, I mean, say comic book stuff about Kang? No.
Well, yeah,
comic book Kang. Not, yeah,
no, not a spoiler.
Yeah. Okay,
it's not a spoiler. Okay, he is the descendant of Nathaniel Richards, who is. Is he Nathaniel Richards? I forget.
That's the thing. Yeah. Right?
It's confused.
He is Nathaniel Richards, who is a... both exists before and after, I guess, the Fantastic Four, but is a descendant originally of Reed Richards. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and
he's a descendant of Reed Richards' father, who is also named Nathaniel. Oh, God, I'm going to kill myself already.
This is why it's not a spoiler, right? I mean, because
it's utter insanity, and it doesn't
matter, because they're never going to use, they couldn't use what's in the comic books because it's such a convoluted mess.
Right, that's it. We can give you all of the ingredients on that can of Coke I just mentioned, and you will not be able to recreate Coca-Cola. It doesn't matter. So, you know. So Nathaniel Richards is a descendant / family, like, somewhere with Reed Richards, and somewhere, I believe, Doctor Doom. Like, there was some of that going on. And goes on to become Kang, who... discovers time travel, or Nathaniel Richards, I forget which one, discovers time travel in the distant future, and then goes back to become Ramon Tut in ancient Egypt, and all of this crazy bananas. Very, very comic booky, fun, goofy, silly stuff. The reason it's sort of interesting is because they have cast Jonathan Majors as Kang, who, black guy, you might have noticed. And while I don't think it should make it
also completely ripped.
Maybe that's where it comes in,
right?
Oh, God, Jonathan Majors in that
good genetics,
Jonathan Majors in that GQ shoot. I'm like, that.
Oh my
that
God,
is,
it's just
it's ridiculous. Like, it made me worried that it's like, dude, you're fine. Like, just go have a burger and a beer. Like, don't you can have just take a week off. But, and this should not matter, and that's what I texted you guys, the fact that Reed Richards is a white dude should have no bearing on his distant ancestor being a black dude at all. But, for the narrative shorthand and the way Marvel may want to sort of make it all kind of make sense and sidestep any... of the incredibly awful and stupid things that are going on in the world, maybe it's just easier to be like, you know what, screw it, Reed Richards, black dude.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah, I'm sure the internet will be very
well-reasoned
in their response to this.
There are people who are going to hate it no matter what it is, and then there are people who are going to love it. So don't just, like...
move with it. Yeah. I think you know, Kevin Feige and Marvel and KEVIN are all smart enough to know you know, just do the make a good you know story, and it's fine. Don't sweat it. And I think they you know they can sit on a comfortable pile of money and not sweat it, because there's plenty of people who will be very happy about it.
And this, genuinely have and I'm going to go out on a limb here, and somehow he's going to get milkshake ducked. But I got a pretty good vibe from Kevin Feige. Like, the dude knows how to make money. He tries interesting stuff from time to time. Like, just last week, we talked about Werewolf by Night. Black Panther 2 is coming out. And I imagine Ryan Coogler is not taking a lot of grief. And, you know, there's a lot of actors in that thing that would just walk if it was something that undermined the heart of the first one. And so, yeah, I have a lot of faith and trust him, and I think, you know, if they're going to tell a good story and they've got a vision, I think that they'll do a great job.
It's a different show.
Yeah, the one that I was actually a little negative on. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I think, I agree. I mean, and I think that, you know, call it a plan or a, you know, a certain degree of trying to make, you know, improve on where you were. But I think that the, you know, Marvel Cinematic Universe over the past few years has spent a lot more time trying to present a much more inclusive and diverse picture of superherodom. And so I would not surprise me at all to take a character who is a marquee character for Marvel and to say, like, you know, doesn't matter who, it doesn't matter what the color of their skin is in this particular universe. This is the person we've cast to play
them. I totally agree. I think it's been unstated as far as I can tell, but I have a feeling that they took, oh God, we just made 6 movies with all white dudes. We didn't really mean to do that. We made all these comic books in the 60s and we just thought we were doing something cool, but wow, this is a, this is a pale sausage fest we got going on, and we could maybe expand that a little bit, you know. And they have been, to their credit, they have been. I don't, there's, they haven't said a statement like, hey, we're doing stuff, but like they have been. Ms. Marvel did an amazing job of that. There's all kind of like the signs that they are expanding what it means to be a hero, and none of them have to do necessarily with punching anybody on the jaw or running. Maybe one of them's going to have a running faster moment, but it's not about that. It's about the cultural things and the underlying ethos and ethics and morality behind heroism, which is not confined to any one culture or people or creed or whatever have you, physical attribute. It's about making choices, which, to their great credit, Marvel has, or Stan Lee's Marvel has, not Stan Lee himself, but Stan Lee's Marvel has always espoused, right? Like, it's about great power comes great responsibility, and that's what being a hero is, and that's why the heroes are often down on their luck, but still do the right thing. And I think the MCU has picked up that baton and has been doing a much better job with it now than it was, you know, in its infancy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like, She-Hulk is another example of how they have taken, you know, and made fun of people who take great umbrage at, you know, girls in my comic book shows.
Yeah, and she literally sticks it to the man, Kevbot 2000. Yeah.
Speaking of Kevin Feige, let's switch tracks over to the flip over to the DC channel, shall we?
Kevin Feige's dark twin.
Dark Kevin Feige.
Yeah. What's the name of that planet that is, like, theoretically, not a planet, okay, Nemesis, like the planet that orbits exactly opposite Earth and you can't see it. And there's whatever.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't exist, but it was for a
that
while.
That we know
funnest.
Of.
Well, you'd notice by gravity. Anyway, whatever.
Guy, can I help this?
Don't make
can
me,
I help you on this?
Don't make me text Dr. Katie Mack again.
No,
she hates it when I text her.
No, Guy, I'm going to put this in terms I think you'll see. It's the Remus to the Romulus.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. How about that? There you go.
Oh, God. Remans. We really did not need Remans.
No, we did not need Remans.
Nobody asked for that. Nobody wanted it.
There was a hot, there was like a time, I think that was just a crutch that a lot of writers were falling back on in the early 2000s, something like that. It was like, you know, like, well, you know, like Lord of the Rings had the goblins and then they had the Uruk-hai, which were like more serious goblins. Yeah. And so let's do that thing. Because there's that, you know, the end of Buffy, there are the vampires that the vampires are afraid of. It's like super vampires. And yet they still manage to kill them just the same as they would kill regular vampires.
Right, it's the same. Yeah.
Well, sure, yeah. I mean,
Rogue One gave us Death Troopers, who were legitimately scary, but it's just like, what if we actually made these guys?
right. That's the problem with these shows and, you know, movie properties. It's like, you know, the heroes plow through the villains so easily that eventually you're like, well, no one takes these drones seriously anymore, so we have to come up with something else.
Yeah.
That was a long way of going around talking about the fact that there's now a unit within Warner Brothers that we call DC Studios. Which is replacing the previous, I think, DC Films or whatever, and will be headed up by the combined team of producer Peter Safran and James Gunn, who most famously perhaps known for directing all of the Guardians of the Galaxy movies, as well as, of course, I'm going to get this wrong. Which one is it? The Suicide Squad?
The Suicide Squad. Boy,
releasing two movies of a couple of years apart with the same title.
They kind of wish they thought on the one first, and I thought on the other. The first one, I think, is the...
Yeah, should have just skipped that. Anyways, James Gunn will be taking up sort of the creative end of the Kevin Feige role for DC. And interesting. This has been a huge talk because the previous DC Films boss was Walter Hamada, who left recently, and there had been some talks about other people that might fill this role that kind of never panned out.
To say Hamada left is, I mean, I think he got...
He got canned when the new David Zaslav came in.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. We've talked a bit about this off the air, but I'm kind of curious about your feelings of James Gunn taking up the reins of this universe. What do you think it means for it, or what do you hope it means for it, I guess?
Well, I hope it means good things for this franchise, because it has struggled mightily, I would say. They've done some good stuff, and they've done some absolutely terrible stuff. And I think on average, Marvel does a better job, for sure. They're not all great. They're certainly not all perfect. I enjoy them all in some way, but... some are better than others, for sure. And some of the DC ones are pretty unwatchable. Whereas I think all of the Marvel stuff is at least watchable. And
it's not insulting. You can watch any Marvel movie and be like, you know what?
Yeah.
Not great, but I don't feel like you made me dumber.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I think he has a pretty good sensibility about what works. And that is making these people seem human. Who are humans who are flawed but trying to do the right thing at the very least, and he manages to do that in both Peacemaker and the Suicide Squad. I mean, these are these two in particular, like, you know, these are terrible people, but they're trying to be better, which is great. I think that's wonderfully watchable, and I don't mind a show with someone who's horrible as long as they're trying to be better. I just want to have something that I can root for, as opposed to just watching people who are patently horrible and not interested in being better in any way. The concern, I guess, would be that he does tend to lean into the hyperviolence stuff. And the question is whether or not Marvel's influence made him, you know, tone that stuff down for Guardians. And if that is not going to be the case if he's, you know, in control of the stuff on the DC side, because I think there is definitely a place for it in Peacemaker and the Suicide Squad. But like Superman in particular, I don't think that works very well.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what John said. I mean, James Gunn has a... he's got a tone, he's got a style, and that's good, because I think, you know, there's nothing worse than trying to do everything. You end up doing nothing, right? Like, if you try to sort of appeal to everybody, you appeal to nobody. You got to make decisions. And I think that is something that DC has, to a certain degree, struggled with. You know, Zack Snyder obviously played a huge part in what they thought they were doing, which was when they were trying to sort of ape what Marvel was doing. And I think he was not the right person for that job. No. I'm not sure that James Gunn's, you know, view is much more appealing to me, but it's definitely more appealing.
I think he, like, has a much better sense. No question, he has a much better sense of humor. I mean, Zack Snyder seems completely humorless.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So there's that going for it. I think I agree with John, the hyperviolence is the thing that appeals to me the least.
Yeah.
And I'm curious about how this impacts some of the stuff that I think we appreciated about what DC did, which is whereas Marvel does feel itself sort of bound to a through line that connects everything together because that's what it's decided to do. DC has shown some success in being able to just do projects that seem interesting with these characters. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think at least some of us came out more positive about the Batman than I think we expected to be. And part of the virtue of that was it wasn't connected to anything else. It was just telling a story. And there is some strength in that. There's some strength in the ability to say, go make a Batman movie, go make a Joker movie. It's not my thing, but you know, hey, that's a thing that you can do. And it's something that potentially plays to a different set of appeals than the hyper-connectedness of the MCU. Mm-hmm. That said, you know, and something else that we had kind of had on our docket here was mentioning in a potential spoiler that the recent Black Adam movie does contain a cameo by Henry Cavill as Superman. So, you know, that does seem like the idea of a interconnected DC universe is still alive and kicking out there. Whether or not, I mean, obviously all this stuff is before James Gunn's tenure, so.
Right,
he could come in and wipe the slate clean, right? Yeah. They could basically say nuke it from orbit and we're starting over, or they could try to salvage some of the stuff that they liked about it and move forward, or they could go in a completely different direction. So having somebody at the top to make decisions who is a creative, I think, is the most interesting part of this to me. Kevin Feige is a creative guy, but he is a producer, not a director or a writer. And that's not to say that you can't be creative if you're not in one of those roles, but he is not someone who gets behind the camera and like shoots a movie, right? The James Gunn is. That's an interesting move.
Yeah.
So that kind of intrigues me, but I'm also worried that it's a big job, right? Yeah. And like
he has said that he will be able to continue to make movies. I'm assuming he's not going to make any more Marvel movies.
When you're the boss, you can definitely keep making movies.
Yeah. I would definitely make a Marvel movie, and I would tank it. I wouldn't. I really wouldn't. I couldn't. I don't have that in my heart to like do a bad job just to be funny. But
I think he has said. I mean, I think it was clear that the Guardians 3 is the end of that franchise, is what I had heard.
Yeah.
Not to say they couldn't pick it up again with a different director, but my reading was that was intended to be the end.
I'm quite sure I'd heard him say it was planned as a trilogy. I mean, God.
Yeah, and apparently, I think Zoe Saldana said that, you know, something about how, you know, it was bittersweet because, you know, going into making the movie because she knew that it was going to be.
Yeah, I mean, she's got to wipe off all of that green face paint and put on all of the blue face paint to go work for James Cameron again.
And to be clear, it's you know, they could easily, Marvel could decide they want to make a new Guardians movie that has just, you know, a different lineup.
They already did.
Remember
when they fired him?
Yeah. But my point was they could decide like, oh, you know what? There will be the Guardians of the Galaxy Avengers will continue just with a different lineup because that group has rotated, like the Avengers has rotated a bunch of different characters throughout the years. Yeah. But yeah, either way. I'm intrigued to see how this plays out. It's going to be a few years probably before we see the actual impact of it. Because movie pipelines are long. It takes a long time for this stuff to happen. There's stuff that's already in production. I would guess James Gunn as a director is less excited about the idea of like, you know, cost cutting, you know, taking movies off the slate just to get a tax write off.
Right.
But he does still have a boss, and that boss is the guy who likes doing that. Mm-hmm. So that presents its own challenges.
Yeah.
So that might be a difficult situation to work in as well.
Right. I wonder how long this is going to last.
Yeah. Yep. I don't know either. But I think DC is a huge gold mine of IP, right? There's a ton of stuff to do, a ton of stories to tell. And I think if nothing else, James Gunn strikes me as the kind of guy who will be interested in mining kind of like weird esoteric corners of the DC universe and not just be like, everything's a Batman movie.
Yeah. We might get a Blue Devil movie.
Yeah. Who knows? You can get anything.
So you didn't ask me what I feel about this.
God, you keep asking
me. I threw it open to everybody. I set it up. I really did. I did
Right. If you're going to start it, then you need to be the one who carries
it on.
That one I did
on purpose.
Ask yourself, guy.
Just for the laugh. I am excited about this. I think, sorry, I don't want to mischaracterize your argument, Dan, but having a voice, any voice, and a strong voice at the top is, it's almost necessary in order to sort of create a consistent body of work, right? Be an editor-in-chief or like anybody, it's like, what is this thing about? What are we actually doing and how are we trying to do it? What is the tone? I think Kevin Feige has set a tone really well, but there's a tonality to the Marvel movies, even something as disparate as Werewolf by Night and Moon Knight. That's a bad. I picked the worst possible ones, but stuff that we saw early in The Incredible Hulk, like the way that the jokes are the timed and like the kind of things they joke about, the vague romance, but like treating love as something that you deal with while wearing oven mitts is a very Marvel choice, right? Like it's there is more, there's far more to life than what Marvel expresses in any way. That doesn't mean putting bullets into people's faces all the time, right? Which I feared that DC was kind of getting in the business of. James Gunn has made a lot of stuff that I, on the tin, would say, I don't want to watch that. I don't want to watch Peacemaker. Michael Cena, who I've got no real... Is it Michael Cena? John Cena.
Yeah. I knew that was wrong, but I couldn't think of it.
Michael Cera. John Cena. Michael Cera. Also, people that my wife confuses constantly.
They're mixed up all the time.
Yeah, Michael Cena and John... That's how you get a Nathaniel Richards. You just mash those two together and you get some.
I was gonna say, if they need to, if they ever need to remake Twins,
oh, that's a good one. Yeah,
that would be really good.
Really great. Yeah. I got no beef with John Cena. I think he's great. I've heard him in interviews. He seems well considered kind of guy. And he told me, hey, I'm gonna give him a giant gun and like a Clint Eastwood gun and have him shoot people. I'm like, I just don't care.
Yeah.
And yet Peacemaker really surprised me as one of the more thoughtful and heartfelt superhero things that I've seen in a good long time. Like a good long time. And I really appreciated that. And if he can infuse just a little bit of that humanity, like what it...
Yeah, which is the thing that has been lacking in the other properties, at least the worst.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Being a hero is easy for a god, right? Like if you are flawless and perfect, you are either, I mean, you're literally biblically either just turning people into pillars of salt or like whatever. It's beyond you. You don't care about anybody. Being a hero as a human being has emotional costs and weights, even if it's not something that is like is Superman ever gonna really die? I mean, we've seen it so many times, but guess what? It's gonna be fine, you know.
It's the 30th anniversary of his death, by the way.
Oh yeah, oh cool.
Yeah, at least like some either just happened or it's coming up or something like that.
Wow.
Thanks.
So we're old.
Good.
He's close, is what I mean.
Did he stay dead? What happened there?
What I'm saying is that he has a good sense of humanity and being human, and you cannot be a hero really without being human.
And Snyder does not have that sensibility, right? Yeah. He plays him as a god. He wanted to make a point of like the difference between gods and men, I guess.
Snyder's Watchmen is, I know so many people hate it and think that it is disrespectful to the original work, which, sure, it's not the book. Go read the book. I actually like the movie. I think it's pretty well done.
It's definitely my favorite thing that he's ever done. I think it's, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, and there's parts of Man of Steel that I like. Not a lot of it, but there's parts.
Yeah.
So yeah, generally, I'm very positive. In when the news came out, I was like, oh, that just makes the most sense. I would love to be a fly on the wall when he goes to talk to Kevin, KevBot 2000, KEVIN, and he's like, dear computer, I am quitting to go work for DC. I don't know if that thing has laser, like a laser optical mode to just annihilate him, but I think the industry is ultimately stronger, or the small industry, the comic book movie industry is ultimately stronger by having good people in charge of both of them. I think the DC will start to capture a portion of the market. Let's call it, I don't want to call it mature because it's completely immature to just shoot people in the face. But I think it is. I don't want to get into it, but it's the dumbest possible. There's just nothing to it. I think it is interesting that there will be two major players, and DC will have a completely separate tone than Marvel. I don't think he will try to mimic that at all, and I think that's good.
Yeah.
I think his remit is to definitely make an interconnected universe, and you should not think that he's just going to let random, like, you know, hey, let's make a movie out of, like, the Clock King. Like, there's no... I don't think that's... Well, maybe that'll happen. God knows. Maybe it'll happen.
I don't know. Clock King would be pretty cool. I don't know. Yeah. I'd watch that.
As soon as I said it, I'm like, oh, God, I'm visualizing the trailer with just a ticking clock going along.
sounds great.
Yeah, just one of those 80s alarms clock with, like, 12 blinking, or, like, a VCR.
Blinking, right? Like, I can't figure out how to reset it.
Okay, sure. Now I've just made a good movie in my head. But anyway, long story short, I think everything will be interconnected because while I see a lot of value in just trying new stuff, that's how you got Joker or the Batman, I think DC and specifically... their bosses at Warner Brothers Discovery and their shareholders are expecting them to be able to match Marvel. I think that is a business imperative. So
yeah,
I think he's going to basically be told, or has been told, that, look, you're going to make all of these things connect and we're going to all laugh all the way to the bank. I'm not entirely convinced that that's the best approach, but I also am pretty sure that that's not on him to decide. So
yeah,
let's see.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good way of putting it. I think that there are a lot of things that are going to be sort of dictated by the way companies do business. And not mining your IP is unfortunately not really something that you can sustain with a company that large. Right. So but I'm intrigued to see what he does with it. And it does feel like at least there may be a more cohesive, unified, interesting take on it. So if it's all Peacemaker, that seems weird. But maybe, you know, I think that he's probably smart enough to know that it's not a one-size-fits-all kind of situation.
No,
but
I would think so, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now,
and like Harley Quinn, the animated show, is very good.
Yeah.
Really good. It's got an actual really great relationship between Harvey and Ivy, which I like. I mean, they're both psychopaths and it's crazy. Like, don't model model your life after cartoon characters.
But that's another show where they're trying to be better. I mean, they're not trying to be good. They're trying to be maybe good to each other, and she's also trying to get what she deserves, which is
exactly
a good message.
I like it a lot. So heart. I think if you can find a way to infuse heart into things, it shows. It definitely shows.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's got a way of doing it in ways that surprise me.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think there is something there. So I'll be intrigued to see what he does with it. And we'll find out probably sometime in the next, several years.
Yeah.
It'll take,
In the meantime, we should probably wrap it up by saying that he is also, he hasn't done his last Marvel work yet because the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special airs at the end of the month. A trailer for that. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying he's got a influence on the universe.
Premiere. Though.
Oh, didn't we ever mention that? I don't know if it was Instagram or something. It was a bunch of photos from his...
His wedding with all the with all the people in it.
Yeah, and he had like a little like a softball game with like Marvel people versus
Marvel
DC
versus
people.
DC.
Yeah, that's great. I like that a lot.
Yeah. That's pretty funny.
And Nathan Fillion's there. I've got a soft spot for Nathan Fillion for, I guess, mostly Castle. Well, Firefly, obviously, and then Castle. Yeah. Dan turned me into Castle. Yeah.
He's Canadian, so he's Canadian. Can have that.
Yeah, yeah. Honestly, one of the earliest things I remember trading with Dan was like, I forget what show I told you to watch. Was it Supernatural?
It might have been.
You told me to watch Castle. And anyway, yeah, it was. I was like, yeah, this is great. It's fun.
We never turned back.
No, you sure did not.
That was many years ago now. Yeah.
12 seasons ago.
And then the other thing we didn't mention, though it's also tied into this, was there was a Green Lantern show in development at HBO Max, which apparently was at the time supposed to focus on a variety of different Green Lanterns, including Alan Scott and
Alan Scott being others. The old school one, the one that is allergic to
the
wood.
Golden Age.
Yeah.
Boy, they didn't have the greatest idea in those days. No. I think we can all
well, the ring
agree.
Was magic.
Doesn't
they
work on yellow.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, they had to come up with that whole. Yeah. I mean, they. It's not like any of it makes sense now, but yellow is fear and green is what? Determination?
Sure.
Wait, no, what is it? Like, they're all...
Willpower.
Willpower, okay. So,
yeah.
But they're, so it makes sense, right? So it's fear versus willpower, like, that you kind of get that they were... Anyway, whatever.
Yeah, to make us all feel old, this project was first announced in October 2019. Yeah. And it still has been... It got to the point of it was cast. There were people who were officially cast to play various people, including Alan Scott and Guy Gardner. And now, when Hamada left DC Films, that this is basically they're scrapping it and starting over and building a show around John Stewart.
Great choice. John Stewart and
who
Justice
is a
League,
fantastic
so
character.
Great. Yeah. Yeah. I know people. I bring her up every now and then. Rebecca Vachon, she's a film critic. Basically, it's like, look, I grew up watching, or, you know, my formative years watching John Stewart. He's amazing, like on JLU and Justice League. And I think somebody was recounting a story, maybe this guy Robert Young, that when somebody, Hal Jordan appeared at some point, and their kid was like, I thought Green Lantern was black. And that's awesome. It's awesome. Sorry, Rebecca is also a black woman. I think John Stewart is one of the more interesting incarnations of the Green Lantern kind of concept. He has done amazingly well in Justice League. Hal Jordan is like yet another, Ron Barry Ron kind of guy. He's cut from the same cloth as like old school DC superheroes. Whereas John Stewart is a little bit more nuanced and fleshed out and more of an interesting character. So I think they've made a great decision to sort of center him on that show.
Yeah, I mean, he's an interesting dynamic character, and his tenure as the Green Lantern, I think, is just seminal. Yeah. I mean, in terms of the comics run, right? I mean, of course, that character was hinted at for a long time in the Arrowverse.
Yeah, I was going to say David Ramsey.
As David Ramsey's character, John Diggle, but never really came to fruition there. I will say this show was originally being developed by Greg Berlanti and Mark Guggenheim, who both worked on Arrow and were like, creators of that. Guggenheim is not involved in the redevelopment, nor is the showrunner who was previously working on the previous incarnation. But Berlanti is still connected to it as a producer. So anything could be happening with this show at this point. But I think Green Lantern is a character who I've always enjoyed, who has never really gotten a great...
Right.
We've never really had a great live action version of Green Lantern and John Stewart in particular. So this seems like a great piece of comic book stuff to sort of, we should definitely be.
I mean, they managed to botch Taika Waititi and Ryan Reynolds in a movie. That seems to fumble it when you've got that much going on. I don't know what to do. I think one of the issues with Green Lantern is his power is basically, I can do anything I imagine. And that's a weird thing to sum it up on screen, right? And it's a weird thing to sort of express, like, okay, well, what are the limits? You know, like Superman, you can punch him through a building and be like, ooh, that could hurt. But what happens with Green Lantern when he, when all he can do is like imagine like a World War II anti-aircraft gun? Like it's not as cool. Like it gets weird, right? So.
Yeah, I actually, I mean, but like at the same time, we know, like, you know, I think Guy and I certainly, Armor John, if you mm-hmm. watched it, we really enjoyed the Green Lantern animated series.
Nope, I did not.
Which shows that you can do that character in an interesting way, and make their challenges seem interesting and just sort of like compelling. I think that's interesting. One of the things I did like about the otherwise kind of awful Green Lantern movie was the galactic focus on it, which is also kind of interesting, because having the Green Lanterns Corps as this sort of peacekeeping service, like, that is an interesting position to put it in. There's a lot of interesting commentary you can do with that too. Yeah. So I think that there's some stuff about that that's kind of fun if you want to take sort of a more of a sci-fi bent.
Yeah.
But
there's an animated movie you got to work on, not connected to the animated show, which I did quite like, although I haven't seen it in years, and I don't know what age level it is. It's quite young. Like it'll skew young. Think Star Trek Prodigy sort of young. Rather than, you know, comic whatever. Cartoons are for all ages now, I guess. There is an animated movie called Green Lantern First Flight, I believe, with Dad and I's favorite guy, Nathan Fillion, as Hal Jordan. And it's actually pretty good, and it deals a lot with that space cop kind of concept. Mm-hmm. And it's like training. It's effectively Training Day for Green Lantern. So, you know, maybe they can get Denzel Washington. That would be great. Denzel Washington and Ethan Hawke in a Green Lantern movie, I would watch the heck out of that for sure.
Call us, James Gunn. We're here.
Jimmy. Old Jimmy Gunn.
All right. We should probably wrap up. We've talked for a while about nothing in particular and about everything. but yeah, lots of stuff happening in the superhero realm. I don't know what we're going to talk about next time.
I don't know, I did solicit. Yeah. Letters, which I did not read before the show. Well, we didn't actually get any.
Well, we can there do them next time.
We didn't get
any.
Yeah,
problem solved. So,
yeah. Okay.
Well,
if anybody out there is still reading the transcripts and would like to suggest things for us to read and talk about and watch, and please let us know.
Is anybody listening to the show?
Is anybody here? Hello?
Hello?
Is this on? you can reach us at biff@theincomparable.com or at biffcast on Twitter. We'll be waiting for your call.
And operators are standing by.
We don't even have operators. It's just us. It's just ourselves.
It's just us.
We're the operators.
This is a shoestring budget kind of operation over here. But we will be back one way or another. Until then, of course, I would like to thank my co-hosts. John Maltz, thanks for being here.
I'm not sure who the grittiest one on this podcast is.
What are you talking about, man?
I don't know. I was thinking about gritty... Gritty superhero shit movies.
Have you seen Guy English dressed up as Gritty, the hockey mascot?
That wasn't even
it's
me
Halloween,
dressed up,
man. I mean,
that was just me before
that's
a shower. Just,
that's what you look like.
Yeah.
That's right. Shower and a shave.
Right. I've literally had the guy stand in the middle of the street and threaten to stick a knife in my cranium. I think that makes me very gritty because I just laughed.
Wow.
Whatever. I don't want to get into that story, but the guy was very...
That's a hell of a story to leave us with the parting moments of an episode.
Just drop it at the end of the episode.
A bunch of drunken idiots at a club kind of thing, and I'm like trying to make them not fight. And somehow this guy's going to magic up a knife, Green Lantern style, and stick it in my cranium? specifically my cranium. And I'm like, that's... I just laughed. Like, what are you going to do? Come on. Like, it's just... Anyway... So, yeah, more gritty than you.
Okay.
I answered that fair. Question. Guy English, grittiest of all of us. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much. That was a lot of fun. A couple of calls to action. Go listen to A Complicated Profession. Yes, that's the name of the show. That was a poor name. You could have picked a better name.
Oh, thanks.
Well, I mean...
It was a great idea when we only had one Star Wars show, and now we have a lot of Star Wars shows, and unfortunately, we're stuck with it at the moment.
Yeah, you guys are covering Andor again, and I am led to understand that Tony is back from Gotham, where he was helping the GCPD track down the Batman. Mm-hmm. So that's great.
Important.
Yep. Also a great show. Tales of the Jedi is out. Great. Go watch that. They're kind of scary, so watch that. And please, for the love of all that is goodness, get out and vote and encourage everybody to vote. Please. Thank you.
I can't disagree with anything that he just said. That was all good stuff, and you should do all of it. But we also appreciate you reading our transcripts and chiming in with all your thoughts and questions and comments and your support over at theincomparable.com, where, of course, you can become a member, and some of that money that you pay to The Incomparable could go to us, your favorite show. That's why you're listening, right? Anyway, we really appreciate it. We'll see you all next time.
I fired up Arrow the other day to try to get some dialogue out of it, and I'm like, I don't even want to look at this anymore.
This is garbage.
It's not garbage. It's just like, okay, I've seen this enough times. I'm done.